Thank you, Mr. Work. All right, I want to say, well, in a second, we need a little gas here. Today is Monday morning, Erev Erev Yom Kippur, September 24th, 2012. And once again, I want to say Boker Tov to those sitting in front of me and to the many that are listening across the world. I want to dedicate today's Shayur. Yesterday was the funeral, and I want to dedicate it in memory of the boy who fell, Netanel Yahalomi. It breaks the heart. The boy went to high school where one of my grandchildren went, to Mitzpe Yericho, where Rab Shabtai Sabato, Rab Chaim's brother, is the Rosh Yeshiva. And he was doing Hesder at Malot. And it breaks the heart. Here we're doing Chesed, feeding these Africans who are running away. Everyone wants to come to Israel, even the Panovich Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Edelstein, gave a shmuas, I understand, that look what Israel has achieved, that every person in the world wants to come live in Israel. And while he's feeding these platim and an ambush and killed, it breaks the heart. You see his picture, Nebuch. What's interesting is I mentioned yesterday how quickly the world changes. Yesterday I mentioned that I alluded to it, I don't have time to go into it. Yesterday was a Shia Shasim Paiskim, different type of Shia. But I alluded to the fact that the feminists were rejoicing that the third Machabel was killed in a Mirdaf by a Chayelet. I just heard the news now and I was just blown away. The whole world has turned over since yesterday. Yes, she killed and it raises the whole issue of feminism and an army with women, and should women be in the front line, and what does the Mishnah Sota mean? Afilu kala chatan v'kala leave the mishteini ginatam and have to join in the war effort, Muhammad mitzvah. You know, there's a lot to say on this topic. It turns out that another chayalet, and I checked with people, why did the army release this information today? So they tell me it's the internet, that the rumors, you know, it's a small country. Having lived here 43 plus years, I can tell you every rumor is ultimately correct. Every rumor. I can give you a list of rumors beginning with 69. Don't have time today. But I can tell you rumors from 69 on, where we conquered a certain island, it wasn't revealed to the Egyptians what we did. 2 days later, every fact was corroborated. I need not tell you the Yom Kippur War. So it turns out that then after the battle was over, one chayelet, did you hear the news? One chayelet was missing. The army went crazy that the terrorist had captured an Israeli soldier. Not just an Israeli soldier, but a female soldier, with all that that implies. Turns out she was hiding under a tree. And the army now is, you have no idea, in an uproar. She's been rebuked. She told the whole story. She was afraid. You'll listen to the news. You'll hear the cock and bull story the girl told. She evidently had, what do we call it, trauma. But what's the English word for shell shock, right? Is that the word? Battle fatigue. I think shell shock is more correct here, because this is Mamish Bishas Maisa. And the shooting began, and she was just rebuked by high-ranking officers that this is not what the army's about, shoot back. And in the background, you could already hear the discussion of the feminists, the pro, the con, and all that goes with it. So, gentlemen, I apologized. I raised an issue yesterday. Where's your wife today? Where's Rachel? Matan, all right. I can't compete with Matan. I raised an issue yesterday. Again, you know, you're older, you're learning on a high level, and you have to accept the fact that this is a high level. And we not always can we give black and white answers. I raised the issue, is it good to teach an 8-year-old kid, kids a Shulchan Aruch? This was an issue raised in a press conference, I told you, in the Gush with Rabbi Lichtenstein, maybe 30 years ago. So whatever issues were raised there would come back to the Kollel here. And we got involved. For years I've discussed this topic. And the truth is I don't have a black and white answer. Because on one hand the kid needs guidance. On the other hand, if you start telling a kid there's only one way to go, I can tell you at my minyan Friday night at the Kotel, someone started saying a Svata Kaddish. We're an Ashkenazic minyan. And one of the people davening there, who must be a Baal Tshuva, and he's not a kid, he's in his 50s, 60s, he started screaming at this guy saying the Kaddish as if he's Mechalel Shabbos by saying Yatzpach Kukenei Avikarev Mishichei. So, you know, you have to understand their various viewpoints, various shita. This issue now with feminism, you're going to see how this is going to be debated in the press and on the websites and the give and the take. And it is a very difficult issue. I've personally, my own opinion, I'm opposed to putting women into frontline positions for many, many reasons. I alluded to it just a moment ago. There's a God have mercy if a woman is captured. Okay, be it said, my heart and my tears go out to that young man from Nofali Ayalon. Halavai, it should be, as his father said at the funeral, Halavai, it should be the last Chayal, the last carbon that we have to bring for the miracle of the state of Israel. Now, we're dealing here. I finished a survey. I don't know all the names yet, and I'll take names later. Let me start teaching. I gave a survey of American Jewish history just to put it into context. There's no question that American Judaism developed into tremendous chesed, and we have to give credit. People who could have totally assimilated in the New World, at least they retained a semblance of responsibility. And even the German Jews, who basically were reformed, but you all know the story with Morgenthau. He was, Secretary of the Treasury, I believe, when they went to Varchatzala to visit him, and Rabbi Avram Kalmanovitz, the Mira Rosh Yeshiva, fainted with tears, crying. Even he was moved. And even the Reformed Jews, at least when it came to Chesed, they have a big schut. And this is why in 1924, the rabbinical delegation comes to America. I mean, it really, if any of you are going to go on to do movies, a lot of a frum lady, a charedit lady, a balat tshuva of American origins, just won every prize in the Israel, I think 8-9 prizes in the Israeli Oscars. And it's a movie that hasn't even been shown yet. None of us have seen it. It's only been shown privately. And it's supposed to be something very, very special. So if any of you go on to do movies, I want to tell you, the rabbinical delegation visit to America, that Rav Kook came, and the Lubavitch Mordechai, the Devar Avraham, that three such people should come to the United States, this is overwhelming. But it shows you what America was already by 1924. I can only add one postscript, that rabbinical delegation visit in 24 greatly impacts upon my daily life, deportment, and behavior. And if anyone can figure that out, I'll get you a gift, but I'll get to it down the line when I deal with the inner story of what is Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Hanan, but it's too early yet. Now, and the Malachim we'll get to much later. That I have to deal with. That's in honor of Yoni. Next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, because he has... I'm sitting here looking at people have no connection to Hasidus. He has at least some connection to Chabad. Okay. Now, what happened with Russian Jewry, we have to be very proud. And although my Rebbe didn't live to see it in the full story, the Rav, for one, I have this in my book, word by word from the Rav could not believe that Russian Jewry was reawakening. Okay? I have it word by word, Am Yisrael, in the piece on Am Yisrael. And it's in the second volume of the Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. And the Rav couldn't believe it, because the Rav knew what communism was. He had experienced communism. Read Shulamit Meiselman's memoir, the Soloveitchik, what's it called? The Soloveitchik Heritage. It's a beautiful memoir. I know that part of the family is criticized, the family secrets were revealed, and yes, it's not easy to be born a Soloveitchik. You live in a glass bowl. No one gives a hoot about Rothkopf, but when you're born a Soloveitchik, it's living in a glass bowl. I understand that. But with all the criticism, I have to tell you, she did a beautiful job. She captures her mother and captures her father and captures her siblings, her brothers. I mean, I knew them all, and I studied with all Reb Shmuel and Reb Aaron and the Rav, and she captures it beautifully. And read the memoir, what they suffered under the communists. And the Rav couldn't believe there'd be a reawakening. How could they still have Jewish feeling? And he said, if it's true, and I don't believe it's true, he said, but if it's true, it's Am Yisrael, that you can't take out of the Jew this concept of Am Yisrael. And here you got to give all the credit to American Jewry. It atoned for its inactivity and its silence during the Holocaust. And Ein HaKinami, we broke the walls of the Kremlin. The Soviet Jewry movement is beyond words. Israel plays a big role. I don't want to say it's only America. But there's no question that that ultimate march in America, where what was it, a million people reach Washington and march on the White House, and it made a statement heard around the world. So this is what happened on that level. The spiritual story is a very tragic story. Hitler killed 6 million. And in the United States of America, endless millions, who knows how many, have assimilated, totally left the Jewish people, totally left any concept of Jewish observance. If you want to see it all, a Talmud, Dr. Marty and Eleanor, Talmudim who listen via the website in Toronto. So here's a picture. It's beyond belief. This is the New York Times. This is Mamish, the New York Times Judaism. You see the parents standing here, normal looking husband and wife. Two very successful men from the Hollywood scene getting married. Lo aleinu. A rabbi. That's the rabbi in the middle, that female rabbi. Believe me, if she would come to daven here in Gris with us, we would not need a mechitza. V'day lechakima. I don't want to elaborate. And there's a kid from his first union with a different man. There's a kid that he adopted, a Chinese kid, a Korean kid, maybe a Vietnamese kid. And now he has three fathers, three parents, three males, the original couple, and the second guy, and the first guy's second husband, whom he's marrying here, has agreed to adopt the kid as well. My dear friends, this is the end of Yiddishkeit. It's assimilation of the highest order. What did I say yesterday? The word of surrender to halacha. This is the one word that no conservative or reform Jew utters today. At one time, the conservatives uttered it half-heartedly, but at least they understood this, a bit of surrender. Today, it's all reform. Now, against this background, the one individual who tried his best, and he's the first one of vision in America. There were other rabbis in America, I absolutely know that. There's an entire book by Benjamin Shaftman. I may quote from it later on. Benjamin Shaftman was the brother of Sal Shaftman, did a doctorate on Abraham Rise. And he deals with some of the early rabbanim who came to America. But no one had vision. They were stuck in their own communities, struggling a daily battle. Lisa had vision. To a certain degree, he was no different than Rav Shimshon the Full Hirsch in his outlook. I gave you his basic biography last week, 1806, 1868, and I showed you, as far as I know, the best source on Lisa is the biography that appears in Guardians of the Heritage, edited by Leo Young. I don't know of a better biography. Although I heard rumors someone started a doctorate, they dropped the doctorate. And Lisa is a very sad life. He was ill. His brother died visiting when he had smallpox. His brother did not survive. He survived. He never married. There was no family. But he founded the Occident. Occident, like, in contradiction to the Eastern world. Look up the word in Webster's on a bridge. You'll see he chose it as if to say, We are in the Western world, we are in the modern world, we are in the enlightened world, and in this world we need Torah im Derech Eretz. The accident was published as long as he lived, even after he died. For a little while he left material. He was rabbi in Philadelphia of Mikveh Yisrael, but he fought with the Balabatim. Ultimately, the Balabatim, who liked him and understood him, had pity on him and mercy on him. I've seen many great Rabbanim. Normal rabbis are not great Rabbanim. They're just normal, fine, nice people. Balabatim can get along with them very easily. Danny, you're reading me? But people who are Talmid Bei Chachamim and Gonim and geniuses, wherever you have genius, wherever you have over-dedication, you have Gaon, Shigaon. You already have rabbis. The Balabatim will say, my rabbi, if you locked him in a paper bag, he couldn't find his way out. It's true, I know Gedolei Yisrael like that. Other rabbanim will say, yeah, my rabbi, he advised Nisim v'Niflot. You know the story, that here at Shabbos, where my rabbi walks, it's still a weekday, it's Nachal. But you have to have mercy. And people went out and founded a new shul, which did not survive the passage of time, but at least there it was like a shtibbel. He was the boss. Now, I ended off the class quoting to you from the accident, and you probably wonder what's so important about this quote. I'm going to come back to it later. This quote is very important. That he complains bitterly about Yom Kippur. That in America, what did Yom Kippur become? A day of visits, the synagogue is full, everyone pops in, people you haven't seen for a year. It's like I told you yesterday, tongue-in-cheek, that I would end off the service in Maplewood. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm happy to announce that the shul will be open once again Rosh Hashanah next year. It falls on September 21st, Sunday night. We will have our regular Rosh Hashanah services. See you all again at that time. Maplewood, 19, read Rod, study Washington and understand what we were up against. Today you still have Tehillot like that, but basically it's a little bit better than the Orthodox rap, that you have other problems, but not such basic problems. But he complained bitterly. People ran in and out of the shul on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur, and they made noise. All right. He did many positive things. Among the positive matters, he retranslated the entire Bible into English. Now, you will say, what is the great achievement, retranslating the entire Bible into English? You have so many English Bibles today. Odd scroll alone may have 7, 8 different types of Bibles, and with Rashi, without Rashi, with English, without English. What's the big deal? Feldheim published its own translation of the Bible. The OU has, what was his name? Kaplan, right? What was his first name? I.A. Kaplan. He did a fabulous translation. This I.A. Kaplan, he lived a very short life. I met him a few times, and I didn't really know him, but he lived a very short life. I think he died around the age of 46. You can correct me if I'm wrong. Younger even? Or early 40s. Wow. He published so much and on such a high level. He was a one-man show about Tshuva. Unbelievable. Ah, the Kaddish Baruch Hu calls him the best. It's like looking at that picture of that boy. You know, it's like one of our own kids. What could I tell you? And they're the ones that are called in. Okay, we can't have Cheshbonos. The Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world his way. Sometimes we understand, sometimes we don't. So we have so many Bibles today. What's the big deal? No, yes, tell them. There was no English translation. All you had was the King James Version. Now, his translation was based upon the King James Version. What he did, he took out the Christological references that the King James Version read into the Old Testament. So it's basically the King James Version revised, or I should use the word adapted, by Lisa. Now that translation was so good that it was the only one we had till must be about the 1917s, 1918s, JPS finally came out with the first Jewish Publication Society translation, which was Yesh Meyayin. In other words, that was a translation that began on a blank pad. They didn't use the King James as the basis. They redid the entire Bible. But even with the JPS translation, when I was growing up, the Lisa Bible was in every shul, was all over the place, and it was a good translation. Yes, King James English at times, all this in the second translation of JPS, all that is ameliorated, and I don't have to tell you in the Bibles that we use today, the translations that are odd scroll in the Torah world, we have already an entirely different language. You don't have that medieval language at all. But you got to give Lisa credit. He saw we need Bibles, we need Siddurim, we need Matzeirim, we need literature. There was no end to his mind and how he worked. More than that, he preached in English. Now, here you come into a very delicate area that none of you can appreciate today. No, he preached in English. What's wrong with preaching in English? When I taught on a collegiate level, when I taught in this building in BMT, you fellas come to class if you want to come to class. If you come to class, you're motivated. If you don't come to class, obviously, I don't have to motivate you. But I don't have to play shtick and bring down Maimon HaSinai here to motivate you. When you teach on a collegiate level, you're getting kids are forced to come to class. They have to take this class. It's required. All right, some of the kids are happy to have you as a Rebbe, and some of the kids are as interested in the history of Torah as I am in Chinese literature. So there's a very fine, prominent rabbi today who just pulled off a miracle. The biggest old-time shul in Teaneck, New Jersey. The rabbi there from time immemorial, Rabbi Washer, was a Talmud Mufak of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Shiva graduate, a Reitz graduate, 1930s. No machitza, conservative temple. That shul just put in a machitza. The rabbi, Rabbi Larry Zierler, who was my Talmud in BMT, reminded me this summer that when he walked into class, one of my lectures on the post-Mendelssohnian era, I zeroed in on him and said, Larry, you are a reform rabbi. He said, Rebbe, what do you mean? I said, what language do you intend to preach in? English. You are a reform rabbi. Whoever heard of sermons? Who gave sermons? Shabbos HaGadol, Shabbos Tshuva. And if you gave a sermon, what language? Yiddish. What did the Ritbaz write? I quoted in my postdoctoral research. It's not, I didn't come up with it. It's the Rabbi Yaakov David Ben Zev Volovsky, chief rabbi of Chicago. When a rabbi gets up to speak in English, walk out. It's the end of the Jewish people when Rabbanim speak English. Think for a minute. And here, Lisa is encouraging sermons, and sermons in English. Not in German, not in Yiddish. You'll see why this is important. I can tell you, between the lines, something that, unfortunately, I'm now in a generation where very few know this anymore. But let me if I haven't recorded it, let me record it now, because it's very important. Mary Rebbe, the Rav came to Boston. And you got to understand, the Rav came to Boston. The Rav came to Boston. He wasn't a Rav. He wasn't world famous. He wasn't revered. Came to Boston in 1932. and he went through hell, spelled H-E-L-L, Pshuto Kamashma'o. I once lectured in Israel, in Brookline, and people in their 80s mocked me. How did you know all this? We lived it. I said, look, I did my research, you know, it was about 20 years ago. So I was young, and they looked at me. You didn't live, you didn't grow up. We lived it. He had a lot of aggravation. But he saw that there's no future. Daniel, unless he opens a Talmud Torah with learning, with Gemara, after for high school kids, after public school, he opened up a, I think it was called Mishkan Yisrael, I have the exact name in Rebbel and in the book on the Rav. So who taught there? He got Rav Shmuel Belkin was studying in Providence for his doctorate. He needed Parnassa. So Rav Shmuel Belkin, you know, Providence, Boston, you took the train, you came into Boston. So no big deal. Shmuel Belkin taught. So here is Rav Shmuel Belkin, an immigrant, who is still breaking his teeth to speak English. The kids are all from Yiddish-speaking homes. How do I know this story? Jimmy Gordon, Zichron Levarach, it's Macy Gordon's older brother. It's a classic story. The Rav tells Rav Shmuel Belkin, you have to teach in English. The kids rebel. And Rav Shmuel Belkin says to them, Sizgonish Vasich Kentan, I can't do anything. Rabbi Soloveitchik ordered me to teach in English, and this is his shul, this is his Talmud Torah. And the kids are in rebellion. Hey, here, Belkin's English, broken mistakes. These are all kids who speak English, but they're equally at home in Yiddish. It's like our kids here, who are my grandchildren, are equally at home in English or Hebrew. All right. The Rav, Jimmy Gordon says, Rabbi James Gordon, afterwards Detroit, Jimmy Gordon says, the Rav comes into the room. Everyone shoots up, you know, they knew the name, Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim's Heinekel, grandson, and you got to understand that Rabbi Belkin had great derech eretz. This is the Rav. This is the, I listened to Rav yet. This is Rabbi Soloveitchik. And the Rav, Jimmy Gordon imitates the Rav, says, what's this I hear that some of you are complaining about the language of instruction? I have told Rabbi Belkin he has to teach in English. Are there any complaints? And the kids are sitting there shaking. No one opens his mouth. No, obviously. Why was the Rav? Why was he so insistent in English? First of all, by 1933-34, these kids were more at home in English than in Yiddish. They went to school in English. They're graduating high school in English. They're preparing for college in English. That's number one. Number two, it's not just that. Time is going to march on. We're not going to conquer America in Yiddish. We're going to conquer America in English. And just as they gave sermons in German, in Germany, in America you have to switch to English. And this was Isaac Lisa. He already foresaw that using German or using Yiddish, that's past history. This is America. And in America, we speak English. And again, you'll see why this is important in a few moments. Now,
what was the language of the sermon?
In New York, sure, we know. In many shuls, German, and in the Reform shuls, English.
No, I mean in Sheret Israel.
Sheret Israel, I don't know. It couldn't have been German. Sheret Israel is Spanish Portuguese. But there, I imagine it was English, because they're already in America since the 1600s. So I would imagine it's English. But check Dr. Grunstein's book, see if he mentions anything on it. Be interesting. I believe there was an English. But in the other shuls, it was either in Yiddish or German. It depended. The Reform were in German. The East Side shuls were in Yiddish. In my time, yet everything was in Yiddish. All the shuls that I recall were in Yiddish. Oh, the modern Orthodox Rabbi Hollander, Mount Eaton Center, he already spoke English. But you should know that Rabbi Hollander was a fabulous darshan, both in English and in Yiddish. He was fabulous in Yiddish. That whole generation was bilingual. Reb Heschel Schechter, the senior, fabulous in both languages. That generation, of course, from the home, their native language was Yiddish. America, right, they learned English, they went to school. You see, when you go to school in English, it becomes a native language. You can always judge a person's native language if you stand in the bank. Watch what number, what language they count in. They brought in, they asked the teller for 1,000 shekel. So see the way they count. That's where you can tell the real inner native language. But Baruch Hashem, there are many people who are equally at home and speaking English, Yiddish, Hebrew, reading it. But he was insistent, the sermons have to be in English. Okay, we'll come back to that. Now, he fought with the Balabata. See, he also later writes an accident, and this is a problem that we live with until today, that the rabbis don't rule the shuls. The Balabatim rule the shuls. He had an incident where a member of Mikveh Yisrael was put into cherem. And they told Rabbi Lisa he has to announce the cherem on 3 successive Shabbatot. Now, why he was put into cherem, we don't know. But obviously, I have a feeling it was not so much for being Mechalel Shabbos as for fighting with the elders of the synagogue. And Rabbi Lisa refused to publicly announce the cherem. Well, he was censured by the Balabatim. Before you know it, they cut his salary. And he writes an editorial in Oxen. It is therefore a great evil that in some places the affairs of the congregation have been put into the hands of men who, however expert in business and acquainted with the ways of the world, and whose claims to be trustees of the synagogues often depend solely upon their possession of superior monetary wealth or other fortuitous circumstances, have not the requested religious information nor a religious character superior to that of other persons to constitute them absolute judges of what is necessary to the advancement of the interests of Judaism in this extensive country. Now notice, he writes in German English. Are you familiar with Rav Hirsch, the original translation by Levy of his commentary on Chumash? German run-on sentences. 50 words to a sentence. The first thing you learn when you switch from the German language to the English language, that in English we break sentences up. We don't have sentences of 50 words. If you know the Rub's Hebrew in Ish Halacha, you'll see that he's writing a Germanic Hebrew. There are sentences there of 30 words, 35 words. It is a Germanic Hebrew. When the Rub was translated into English by Larry Kaplan, you'll notice that it is a beautiful English. It is no longer a Germanic English. So here he just wrote one tremendous sentence. But unfortunately, what he wrote is as true today as it was from time immemorial. And here, I'll give you the Rakefet solution in a minute. I'll give you the Rakefet solution, which is a prime religious Zionist solution. But the problem is real. You have Rabbonim, Tzaddikim, Gedolei Yisrael, but you're subject to Balabatim. And I don't have to tell you congregational pressure and Balabatim. And you, this is so true. If you know Beth Jacob congregation in Beverly Hills, arguably the second most influential Orthodox shul outside of the state of Israel. It's second only to KJ, Kehilat Jeshurun in New York. Well, in KJ, you have a dynasty, a rabbinic dynasty, but even the Luxtins cannot rule like a monarch. They have to rule in consonance with the Board of Trustees. But in Beth Jacob, you have a history of rabbis. All right, Rabbi Dogen built the shul. He was powerful. The minute he left, you can do a novel on the rabbis who were there and why they left and what went on. So I happen to know that congregation. So some of the Balabatim gave me insight. I think I told you that I went and had a whole discussion with them. So they said to me, you're a miracle. Why am I a miracle? They say you're the only one that everyone agrees is a top rabbi, that we revere you. I say, yeah, Kozval, I'm not the rabbi. You revere me the minute I become the rabbi. And I have to make decisions. I'm finished. But they said to me, we'll explain to you, Rabbi, what are the problems here? And it's not that shul, there's another shul, Young Israel, for the, and if you know the history, these men, among you have tens of people here who are worth $250 million, $500 million, $1 billion. These are very successful men. And they feel if they're so successful in business, no one can tell them how to run a shul. And that's why any rabbi that comes along, he's up against world champions in their fields of endeavor. You know what's amazing? That's exactly what Isaac Lisa says here. He had a lot of insight. He says, these people, they're running shoes. They're heads of shoes. They're making the decision. What gave them the right? The fact that they're very successful in business, that they have a hell of a lot of money, or other fortuitous reasons, what they married into the right family. Yeah, right. These are factors that have to be considered. And he that editorial probably gained him a lot of enemies. And ultimately, he had to leave the shul, and he went, and they organized. But people who understand him, the rabbi's absolutely right. And we have not solved this problem. So you know what the Rakefet solution is? When I was giving lectures many years ago on Aliyah, I don't remember where it was. I may have been in one of the Machon Gold or Michalar or BMT. I use the term that in our generation, every generation has one mitzvah that stands out above all. In our generation, it's Aliyah. That's the mitzvah that is the most important mitzvah we have to rebuild the Jewish people after the Holocaust, to rebuild and to come home to Israel and turn it into the center of Jewish existence. So someone shot at me, well, don't they need rabbis in Chutz Laretz? So I said, I have the perfect answer. We run a rabbinic program here. And I use the word Jewish agency. It doesn't have to be the Jewish agency. We send rabbis all over the world. We pay their salary. Baltimore needs a rabbi. Give you a rabbi for 5 years. This is what you have to pay the Jewish agency. They pay his salary. In matters of halacha, he is the authority. That way you solve so many problems. The rabbi's no longer under the thumb of the Balabatim. The rabbi's independent. The rabbi's home is in Israel. The rabbi spends 5 years in the Gola, makes enough money to afford an apartment here. You understand? That's one of the biggest problems, as we all know. You got to come in Aliyah, you have to buy an apartment. Well, all right. To buy in Yerushalayim is a bit of a problem today. To buy in Eilat, I imagine, is a little bit cheaper. But the rabbi goes for 5 years. So I have a solution. But I have to say, Isaac Lisa, kol hakavod lo. Now, he goes on. You have other editorials in the Occident. And here, too, he's ahead of his time. When I came to Maplewood, here I have to build a new Orthodox shul, a first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. And you're up against the biggest conservative temples, biggest reformed temples, world famous spiritual leaders. But some of them were really Herb Weiner, if you remember the name. He wrote the 9 1/2 Mystics, if you remember that book. You should know. I don't know. Part of his children are totally Shomrish Torah mitzvah today. He was like a part of the children. I don't know all, but part live here, 100% tzaddikim gemurim. He was Reform Rabbi. Teddy Friedman was conservative. Louis Levitsky, Reconstructionist, world famous people. And here we're building a shul. So, you know, what did these people know? They knew the shul from downtown Newark. Downtown Newark, what happened Shabbos morning? Kriyat HaTorah. First of all, our davening is too long. Who can sit 3 hours without speaking? So the first thing you have to do, make it more concise. If people would listen to me, no davening all over America should be more than 1 hour and 40 minutes. And then you have Kiddush, and then you have classes. Because the teaching of Torah will create Torah. I am a Litvak. That's where it begins, and that's where it ends. All right, you're a chassid, then make a brengen, whatever. So how do you make the davening 1 hour and 40 minutes? The biggest problem with davening is the laning. What's the problem with laning? It's very simple. Everyone makes a mishaberach. Then you ever see these guys make a mishaberach? You can drop that in shul. No one will notice. You're gone. A mishaberach for his wife. And then he begins with his children. And then he begins with his grandchildren. And then he begins and he starts stumbling on the names of his daughter-in-laws in the parents. And then the great-grandchildren. Ribbono Shel Olam, I make a mishaberach for my wife. Just now I had shlishi this past Shabbat. I made a mishaberach, Malka, bas Simcha, v'chol yotzei chalutza. I'm going to start listing out my grandchildren, my sons-in-law, my granddaughters-in-law, my great-grandchildren. Ribbono Shel Olam, Rakepa Ketzan Aliyah, just the mishaberachs alone are 15 minutes. You get someone already with 12 children, just think what goes on. So the first thing I did, and then the Lubavitcher Rebbe did it, and said, I heard the Rebbe did, but I didn't know that the Rebbe did it. I abolished all Mishaberachs. A Mishaberach Klali at the end of davening. It worked fairly well. My only problem was with the big guys with money from downtown Newark. When they got up, they insisted the world had to know. As Mingit Kamishim Dollar Lebeit HaKnesset, they're giving $50 to $50. They're giving $50 to the shul. The world has to know it. But you see, if you can abolish, and it's abolished for everyone, and you make a mishaberech for chayla, and it's not that some people, they collect names. You ever see a gabbai get up with a list in front of him, 72 names? No, you make the mishaberech, and everyone puts in the name in his seat. You pause. Please enter the name of the person you are praying for. Understand? So he here yells and shouts against the mishaberachs. I love him. Is it necessary for the whole community to be informed that a certain gentleman or lady has built to appropriate, say, $50 towards the support of the charities or the general treasury of the congregation? Could not he or she send a voluntary gift to the collector or whoever the person be to receive the same without proclaiming it in the midst of the multitude? And I have to tell you, he was ahead of his time. One of the great innovations of the Young Israel movement, and you know, the Young Israel movement is, where today already Young Israel is not what Young Israel used to be or should be, because you don't need it anymore, basically. Although there are communities where Young Israel is still on the cutting edge. But the Young Israel movement, when it began almost 100 years ago, you got to understand how revolutionary that was. Sermons in English, no talking during davening, cut out all mishaberachs, no schnuddering, mishanada, schnuddering in Yiddish. No, right or wrong, no mishanadas during the davening. And today, very few shuls in America continue with the money system. Chabad is to be admired because Chabad Lachatchila does not allow schnudders, does not sell seats. You should know Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they refuse to sell seats. That's Chabad. They're open. Everyone is welcome to come. So a guy comes and he feels spirituality. He leaves $1,000. If you sold seats, you'd get $100. This way, you make with one guy, you already covered 10 seats. He was ahead of his time. The accident, when you read it today in retrospect, you agree with every single word that he said. Now, he dreamt about starting a rabbinic school. And here he had a certain mindset, which none of us have today, because unfortunately, the realities of life have proven this mindset wrong. But I have to tell you, in my primitive feelings, I totally agree with him. It's come out in class that, you remember a few weeks ago, Rabbi Rubin castigated the 92,000 people who got to the Seim Shas, that some of these people were sinners. Listen, not most of them, by far not the majority, a minority, a miyotanikar, unfortunately, in halachic language. I know many people who were there, my own nephews were there, I can assure you they're not sinners. Many people were there from the Shtibl and Borough Park where I daven, and I can assure you they're fine, good, upright people. They don't sin, they don't cheat, they're not in jail, they haven't gone to jail. They were all upset when the Shpinker Rebbe spoke at the keenness against robbing from the government, if you recall what I'm talking about, three summers ago. So you have to understand that I answered Yitzchak, we're at fault, because people should see us, and if they see a from Jew, they should say, we're going to be like that, we're going to change, we're going to be upright, we're going to be righteous. Lisa felt there was no such thing as Reform Judaism. Lisa felt, we're talking about Isaac Lisa, Lisa felt that it's lack of knowledge. If only we can educate them, they will become good Jews. Lisa felt that every Jew basically wants to be good, wants to be proper, wants to be observant. If we can only educate them, we will succeed. Now, this will explain to you a good deal of what happens later in life. And I have to tell you, he's not incorrect in these feelings. All of us who were in outreach, all of us, this world today, I always say our generation is characterized by one pasuk out of the 30 that we read in Rosh Hashanah and the Musaf. And this is our generation. It's the generation of tshuva. And we believe with all our heart, I believe with all my heart, and I know some of you are involved in outreach, and many of you listening, and many of my top students throughout the last 20 years in the Kollel. It wasn't like that before. But the outreach now became a major, major movement, and they need people. If you wouldn't go into outreach if you didn't believe that every Jew wants to be pure, has divinity in him, seeks God. And you have to lead him, you have to teach him, you have to show him, etc., etc. So I don't want to mock Lisa. And he perhaps was, you can call him primitive, or juvenile in this belief. But it is a basic belief. We can elaborate upon it. Isn't tshuva based upon it? Isn't the whole concept of ubikashta mishem, of the asid in Yisrael asot tshuva, the Rambam hilchot tshuva, you can find ample support that Rebbe, don't call him primitive. The man believed the heart. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work. Now, why is this so important? Was one of his biggest dreams to establish the first rabbinical school in America. Until the 1860s, no one dreamt of having a rabbinical school. All the rabbis, or so-called rabbis, or clay kodesh, use whatever word you want, were imported. Either they were products of Germany or products of Eastern Europe. You had endless reform rabbis in America. You had some graduates of the Pressburg Yeshiva, Central Europe. And already by the 1860s, you had one or two Eastern Europe Rabbanim. By the 1870s, 1880s, it's a different story. You have a floodgate of Eastern Europe Rabbanim. But he dreamt we have to have an American school. And he established, he was the leading spirit behind Maimonides College. Maimonides College, and we'll come back to Maimonides College time and again. It was never succeeded. It never had more than 5-6 students. It was in the 1860s. It lasted 5-6 years. It basically, it never really got off the floor. It just couldn't succeed at that time in America. The base was not there yet. You see, because Maimonides College, by the 1870s, you have the Reform movement. And remember, it didn't begin as a Reform Hebrew Union. We're going to talk about it. And then you have in the 1880s, you have Jewish Theological Seminary. But in the 1860s, the ground was not yet ripe. What's amazing about Maimonides College is that he joined forces with the Reform. He felt there's no need to call it Orthodox, no need to give it a name. He could never, I quote, bring himself to regard the Reform as a movement. And he had a perfect right to say that we should not hate our Reformer brothers for their opinions, since we should tolerate the sinner, though we detest the sin. Besides, errors have already existed and will do so yet longer, till the time when all mankind will be converted to one faith and save the Lord with one accord. And he didn't give up in the Reform movement. He could never bring about a situation that would happen in America in 1956, where you would issue a cherem against sitting with Reform and conservative rabbis or Reform and conservative congregations. And you all know what I'm talking about, the cherem of the Rosh Yeshiva that a guy named Rakefet writes about in great detail in the Silver Era. That was Lisa.
Where?
Unique.
Where was it?
Philadelphia. Sorry. Philadelphia, in his hometown. And everything he did, ultimately by he started the it was not called Jewish Publication Society. But after he died, what he began officially became Jewish Publication Society, Philadelphia. Philadelphia, for many generations, was the center of American Judaism, underline American Judaism. Even JTS, some of its most prominent teachers, came in on the railroad from Philadelphia once or twice a week. And then there's another point that Klein, the authoress of the article I'm citing from, makes, which is a very fascinating point. Could be, had Reform Judaism, in other words, what I showed you earlier, there's no way we can be open-minded or gracious to such individuals. My answer, if I met them, I'd say to them, look, I have to be honest, I'm a Torah Jew. When I wake up in the morning, I ask, what does God want out of me? I don't ask what I want out of God. And there's a chasm between us that perhaps is inapproachable. No one would ever dream that Reform Judaism would descend to this level. But you see, Reform Judaism in the German Reform that reached America, it was not that extreme. It still hovered between two worlds. And for instance, Isaac Mayer Weiss, who's credited with establishing the powerful Reform movement and establishing all the institutions in Cincinnati. It is said about Isaac Mayer Weiss, and this is, you'll see it in memoir literature, he never left his house in the morning without having studied a Blatt Gemara before he left his house. It's Isaac M. Weiss. More than that, he threatened to sue, this is, you have sources, he threatened to sue Isaac Lisa because Isaac Lisa called him a Machalo Shabbos for certain innovations that he entertained. And he said, I'm a Machalo Shabbos. I'll sue you. I'm as much as a Shomer Shabbos as you are. And he threatened to sue Isaac Lisa. So you see, the Reform movement was not as pronounced that you could say, Schazetreif, I can have nothing to do with it. Here. Isaac M. Weiss, he doesn't leave the house at Davin, and then he learns the Blatt Gemara, and then he leaves the house, and he won't leave before, and Lisa called him a Machalo Shabbos, he goes crazy. Today you can call a Reform rabbi a Machalo Shabbos, so what? He'll look at him and say, my Sabbath is not your Sabbath. Who would ever dream in America they would have Temple Emmanuel? For many decades, their main service was on Sunday, not on Saturday. Right or wrong? And this will explain, and everything we're saying, this will explain Minig America. In 1855, it's a date, but Minig America was spoken about long before and long afterwards. What does it mean, Minig America? It's very simple. Wherever we Jews have gone, we've established our own minhag. All of you know you have slichat, a Polish minhag, Lithuanian minhag, Sephardic minhag, Eitot HaMizrach minhag. You have an edited version of slichat, which gives you the German version of slichat. Wherever you go, every time we Jews have established our own minhag. Right or wrong? No, we have to have a Minig America. Isaac Mayer Weiss led the battle. Lisa attended the conference. You have to ask yourself a question. What is Lisa doing at a conference to establish Minig America headed up by classic Reform rabbis by that time? Talking the 1850s. But it's obvious. He thought we can have one Minig. We'll say to them if they want to say we're going to leave out Kabbalah. So we're going to answer, how can you leave out Kabbalah? That is basic to Yiddishkeit. Open up the Rambam. Open up Seder Kedushin. He thought he could cajole them. We're going to leave out the return to Eretz Yisrael. How can you do such a thing? And he went, didn't succeed. But you see, he had the dream of flexibility that we can establish Minhag America. We can find a Minhag that Reform and Orthodox can agree upon. He was naive, say what you wish, but this was his thinking. Give them wisdom, open their eyes, and we will go on a good path. In one of the accidents, he tells an interesting story. In other words, here he is, what's the word they use, triumphalism. He comes across as, I told you so. What happened in the 1850s with all this talk about Minig America, they decided, the Reform movement, that if you wish, you can abolish Yontif Sheni. Excuse me. Yontif Sheni in Chutzlautz, I need not tell you. What do you mean Yontif Sheni? We have a calendar today. You understand? There's no Sveika Dioma. I need not tell you how much has been said about this. So they abolished Yontif Sheni. So they tell the story about Isaac Mayer Weiss, that he comes in to the big Reform temple in Cincinnati, and first day of Yontif of Sukkot in 1855, and he rises to preach. And most of the temple is empty. He thundered at the empty seats to produce their owners. Imagine, he's yelling at the seats. Where are your owners declaring that the festival of Sukkot was just as important as Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur? The seats responded not at all, for their owners were enjoying for the first time in Cincinnati business as usual on the initial holiday of Sukkot. And of course, see, when you abolish, take a look what happened in the Reform movement. You abolish second day Yontif. How many Reformed Jews know there's a festival of tabernacles? How many Reformed Jews know that there's a festival of Shavuot? What they did with Shavuot, they put the confirmation is done on Shavuot. Man matan torateinu. So the confirmation of the boys and girls is tied in with Shavuot. That's how they get people to the synagogue on Shavuot. If not for that, who heard of Shavuot? Sukkot has mazel. It's after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So people heard about it. Pesach has mazel. It parallels Easter lahavdil. So people have heard about it. But Shavuot, who heard about it? So they came up with the confirmation services. But he is on the offensive here. And Isaac Lisa hits hard, hits strongly. Okay, now, I want to come to a very important point, introduce you to an interesting world. Give me 1 second, I just want to see who is brave enough to study with the one Rebbe that has taught for 54 years and has never, ever insulted or bitten a student. Toldot, okay, that's where we are. Josh Guttenberg, okay. Morty Tarragon, Charles Hexter, Danny Shulman, Daniel Abraham, Nathaniel Fishman, I do not see. Moshe Raps, I do not see. Yoni Miller, who is Josh Berman? Josh Berman, you spoke to me after class. What's your smicha? What year? Fifth, did you say? Don't you have smicha already? Fifth? You sound like the guy in Lakewood. You know what happened in Lakewood. Friday afternoon, we used to have off. We could do whatever we want. So that continued even into modern times. In my days, no one had a car. Whoever heard of a yeshiva kid having a car? Today, a guy is driving a car, goes through a stop sign, the police hail him over, and the Irishman says to him, how many years are you studying in the yeshiva? And this guy thinks, about 8 years. 8 years and you still haven't graduated? No wonder you're so stupid that you go through a stop sign. So I welcome you to the graduation class. I just gave you smicha. And you're not stupid. Halavai vaita. Where do you live? Ah, so you're here in Israel. Okay, that's a different ballpark. A lunch, but okay, anybody else? You were in the Makarit class. 1 second. Sam Frumsting. Frumson. Sam, let me get it right. Frumson. Okay. Let me just play with the names for a minute. Sam and Josh. Okay, and Josh Guttenberg. Josh is a popular name. My dear friends, this is an accurate and honest description of Isaac Lisa. The man had vision. In many areas, you can compare him to Rav Shmuel Raphael Hirsch. Translated the Bible into English. Put out weekly articles, monthly articles, monthly publication. Translated other volumes, prayer books, etc. Wrote, published, encouraged a minor Rav Shmuel Raphael Hirsch. On the ground, very little success. His greatest ideas, such as Maimonides College, fell by the wayside. Any attempt to organize Minhag America, which would be acceptable to all, fell by the wayside. But on a different level, he had even less success in the history of our people. And here you come to a sideshow. The conservative movement, the word conservative Judaism does not come into existence until the mid-1910s, the mid-teens. JTS began as a institution totally committed to Torah, Torah Shebektav, Torah Shebaal Peh, if you know their preamble to their constitution. It did not use the word Orthodox for one simple reason, not to scare reform money away. Hakesev Yonet HaKol, and to organize JTS in the mid-1880s and put the word Orthodox would have made it financially impossible. So they speak in terms of tradition, commitment. They speak and make clear how they're going to be different than Hebrew Union College. All of you recall my lectures, I trust, on Reform Conservative Movement, how they began in America, the Treif Dinner in Cincinnati, Hebrew Union College's first graduating class, I believe it was 1883, and that ultimately is the catalyst that brings about JTS a few years later, 1887. Fine. As JTS develops and moves into a conservative hold, it's in shame to say it was just invented in the United States in the 1900s. They want to find antecedents. There has to be a history before. And what they latch onto is a term called historical Judaism. Now, what historical Judaism is, I can explain to you in a few minutes. It's not a difficult concept. I alluded to it yesterday in class when I was very careful in the language that I utilized. In the language I utilized yesterday, historic Judaism goes back to the 1800s in Germany, where an entire cadre of scholars developed who, in practice, were observant. You can call them orthodox, orthoprax. But whether you can call them orthodox is questionable. And what am I referring to? Torah Shebaal Peh. When you talk about Torah Shebaal Peh, how do we view it? We view Torah Shebaal Peh, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu a Torah Shebaktav and a Torah Shebaal Peh. By the way, I gave many lectures on this years ago. I've heard of someone of great importance, certainly the lecture I gave on Torah Shebaal Peh with Rabbanan Cutler and the Slabutger, with that lecture, said it was the best lecture I ever gave. So I accept his judgment. This person is a big success story. So we believe there was a Torah Shebaktav, a Torah Shebaal Peh. And Torah Shebaal Peh gave us the utensils, the framework, that we can answer any question that comes along throughout the millennium. We can't always be Makil, but at least we have the tools how to answer whether you can use an automatic elevator on Shabbos, whether you can use a delayed reaction, a jeep, a person who's sick, and the only way you can get to shul is with one of these mechanisms developed by Tzomet, where he can drive himself and it's a grummer switch. Well, these are interesting questions. How do we answer them? Can we shave with an electric shaver? I've seen entire books. One of Talmud of mine wrote a book of about 700 pages, Asserin using an electric shaver. All right, I went through the volume and I reached a very simple conclusion that it could be a Jew should have a beard. We'll leave that question hang fire. I don't know what they would do if they met the Ramchal, if they met the author of the Mesilat Yesharim. They would have a bit of a problem because he taught me how to shave. But be it as it may, I'm not here against beards. It could be Yaakov is absolutely right that a good Jew has to have a hadrat panim, but you certainly can't shave an electric shave. I went through that whole volume. It's a Talmud of mine, but he went right wing afterwards, which he's entitled. But wow, that volume convinced me I can go on shaving, no problem. Now, but I'm not telling you to shave. I'm not advocating shave. But what can I do? I was raised that way. I come from a different era. So this is the way we view Torah Shabbat Path. Ayin Tachat Ayin, of course, is the classic example. The Torah says Ayin Tachat Ayin, and Chazal say in Baba Kama, Mamon Tachat Ayin. Well, how do we view that? We view that when Moshe Rabbeinu was taking dictation from the Ribbono Shel Olam said to him, this is what you write in the Torah. And in the Torah Shabbat, you write Mamon Tachat Ayin, and I've given. I mean, any Rav has to give many, many Sheyurim on the difference between Torah Shabbat Tav and Torah Shabbat Peh. One is Midat Adin, one is Midat Rachmin, one is Midat Chesed, etc., etc. Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, Halacha B'Olam Hazeh, Halacha B'Yimot Tamei. There's a lot to talk about. Fine. The historical school that developed in Germany. And I can mention, for instance, Professor Frankl of Breslau, good example. There are many other examples. Professor Gretz, Heinrich Gretz, the historian who grew up on the lap of Rav Shmuel Feil Hirsch, they viewed Torah Shabbat Peh as a gradual development. See, history. And Achada Am's essay on Ayin Tachat Ayin is classic conservative Judaism. Aharam, Moshe Ginsburg, was a big Talmud Chacham. It's an interesting life story. His parents listened to me. He wouldn't have been a Aharam. He would have been a great Talmud Chacham. But unfortunately, his parents didn't listen to me, and the rest is history. He wanted to go to Gymnasium, and they said, over our dead bodies, came to Hasidisha home. So when his parents dropped dead, he went to Gymnasium, and he became a Aharam. You understand? He wanted to broaden. Let him broaden. Don't be afraid. He can come out like the Rav, come out like the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Don't be afraid. He was a Gaon Adir Haram. He was Masada Gittin. He was a Shtat Rav in his 20s. Then in his 30s, he became a Haram, became an accountant, Vesevsky T. He was the chief accountant. Did you know that? Vesevsky's T. A Haram was the chief accountant in Russia. So he wrote an essay. And he says, no, originally the Torah meant Ayin Tachat Ayin, Pshuto Kamashma'o. But as the Jew developed, as the Jew grew older, Josh, how is your son, right? You told me your son, yeah, okay. Baruch Hashem. As the Jew developed, as he grew in stature, as time marched on, he became more sophisticated. Ayin Tachat Ayin, this is primitive. Gotta get rid of it. Torah Shabbat Peh, Catholic Israel. Remember I said Catholic Israel yesterday? As Solomon Schechter understood it, Catholic Israel can decide. And that's why yesterday I was very careful with my language, because I will never speak of development of Torah Shabbat Peh. I will always speak of the dynamics of Torah Shabbat Peh. That's a beautiful word, and that's what Torah Shabbat Peh is about. But if we're going to look already, gradual development, historical development, then if you take it further, no, driving to shul on Shabbos, don't you have the responsum of three rabbis who were all raised in strictly Orthodox homes, all went to yeshiva in their youth, Jacob Agus, Morris Adler, and Teddy Friedman, who I knew very well, graduate of, went to Reitz, later goes to the seminary. Morris Adler's father was Mashgiach and MTJ. He brought Reb Moshe in to Mesifta Tiferet Yerushalayim. Morris Adler, the only American rabbi killed in the pulpit, executed Shabbos in front of the whole congregation, a teenage kid. Remember that? Mid-60s, the Thruway in Detroit is named in his memory. The Morris J. Adler, or what's it called, Thruway, it's unbelievable what we have seen in life. And Jacob Agus, we spoke about him yesterday, Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, of Rabbi Dov Revel. I write about him in Bernard Revel. Wow. No, historical development. Daniel, the people live too far from the temple. If we don't permit them to drive, no one will get to the temple. This is the historical development. We've now reached an era where without having cars on Shabbos, the temples will not survive. Eit lasot l'Hashem hefer toratecha. But you'll see in the tshuva. Two other mitzvot already. What about visiting your mother-in-law in the hospital on Shabbos? But not to go to a shopping center. It's all there. In the, that's the historical school. And ultimately, I don't have to tell you what stage we've reached today where halacha is not even a factor. They asked the student in JTS when they declared homosexuality to be normative. So they asked the student, I think he was in the final year of ordination there, they said to him, how do you change something in the Bible? He says, what, is this the first thing we've changed in the Bible? We've changed other parts of the Bible. If we can change other parts, we can change this too. Historical development. Man has now reached a new level of understanding. Homosexuality is not to be laughed at, not to be snickered at. This is normative. And it's normal family. Can't even go further. Forget it. But you read what they write, it's just beyond words. But that's the historical school. Now I have to say in full justice to those who began and thought this way and no one ever dreamt in the terms of what has happened to the so-called historical school conservative Judaism today. Not Solomon Schechter, and not any of the innovators in Germany. They, on an intellectual level, couldn't comprehend Torah Shebaal Peh as we understand it. So on that level, they saw in each generation there is a certain addendum, a certain alteration, but the core remains solid. Of course, once you start to snip away at Torah and tradition, Torah Masara, so of course, for 100 years, they made small snips. 100 years later, they make major alterations. That is the historical school. And the conservative movement, at least at the seminary, the faculty, the teachers, started to propagate that theory. The conservative movement wasn't born in 1917 in the United States. We are the heirs to a hallowed tradition that really is Chazal, that really is Torah and Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, and as expounded and brought to reality with so many writings and publications in Germany in the 1800s and the 1900s, this is the historical school. This is conservative Judaism. Danny, yeah, I haven't reached my point yet and I'm fighting the clock, but go ahead. No, you come first. I don't know what you're referring to, but saving a non-Jew on Shabbos, Bisman Hazer, is not even a Shaila. We take the Miri's approach and we'll solve the problem of the nobody who there, etc. Okay? I don't know about Norman Lamb, but I know what you're referring to. But Feldman is a Sonny Israel. He marries a Korean woman and expects us to accept him to marriage. What do you want out of us? Brilliant guy. We have no... brilliant guy. My Maimonides graduate. Yeah, go ahead. So Darkei Shalom allows us to update, fine. But Darkei Shalom is in the... I want to ask you a different question.
Well, that's a terrible thing to say, what he just said. Update, what do you mean update? It means that the Torah was vicious?
That's just what I'm telling him. Darkei Shalom is a principle in Torah Shebaal Peh. And in every... Well, say that, but please, let me finish my point. In every generation, we have the right to use Darkei Shalom. And if it's not an idol worshiper, and if we punish Shalom, we have to do everything to help him. But I just want to tell you one thing. I'll ask you a different question. The king says to you, no, you tell me where this tshuva is from. It's from the Rishonim. The king says to you, I'll kill your classmate unless I can chop off your hand. No? Do you let him chop off your hand to save the life of your classmate? It's a whole shmuis and the Rishonim. You're not obligated. How can the Torah require you to have your hand chopped off? Yet how can you, this guy lose his life? You understand? In life, there's certain situations that are very difficult. And Darkei Shalom is a principle. There's a whole literature on this. I don't want to scratch the surface because it'll take us. There's a whole literature. But this is exactly my point. As a Torah Jew, I view Darkei Shalom as a principle in Torah Shabbat prayer that's been there from time immemorial. And therefore, I can utilize it. A God will be Israel. Writing a tshuva has the right to utilize it. The historical school would view it. They didn't give a hoot about these people. They were not good Jews. They were not Jews. They were not this. We hate them. This. But we're modern today, so we have to save them on Shabbos. D'racher d'achei shalom. You understand? No, d'racher d'achei shalom was there, but it was man matan Torah. Okay? But that's the way I would view it. But I want to tell you, it's you touched upon an interesting topic for a reason that I don't know if you all know this, but who is the Rav's top Talmud? No, tell me who's the Rav's top Talmud. A lot of people claim the crown.
The answer is depends on the decade.
No, I once told you I once answered each decade, but that's not important now. Rabbi Lichtenstein will tell you that the Rav's top Talmud was Jerry Blitzstein. Yaakov Blitzstein, my classmate. He was a year behind me in high school, college, but my classmate. Jerry was this tall. He's still this tall. A gone. Are you familiar with making of a gadol? What do you mean? If you're familiar, you know right away. Reb Nassim Kamenetsky describes that Reb Berech Ber Leiber, which danced around Reb David Friedman, Reb David Kalina, Vika Azak Kleina Mensch. Reb David Kalina was 4'9". There's a picture of him at a Mizrahi conference. All the Rabbanim tower over him. And he knew more than all the other Rabbanim put together. How can such a small person know so much? Reb Berkwell was dancing with the Talmidim. Read, making of a gadol. Invest $10,000 and buy it on the website. You should know, I gave away a set to a Talmud of mine who did me a favor. I said, all right, let me give him a reward. And Baruch Hashem, best investment they ever made. Danny, one second. Where was I? Making of a gadol. I lost what we were talking about. Jerry Blitzstein. So Jerry Blitzstein, in Rabbanim's opinion, is the top Talmud of the Rav. Well, I'll say this, a genius. No two ways. His grandfather was the Mabit, was the famous Rav Moshe Ben Yamin Tamashev, Rav of East New York, Agon Adiyam, and Svarim. Jerry's a genius. So Jerry tells the following story. He wrote it up, I think, in tradition years ago, that he was sitting with the Rav in the 60s, and he says, and they're talking about saving a Gentile on Shabbos. And the Rav, and he says to the Rav, and Rebbe, you know, the reason they get, yeah, the Rav says, yeah, I know, the world is small today. He quoted the Achronim, going back to the other Yehudim, etc. And you don't want to create Eva, Mishum Eva. He says, Rebbe, does that satisfy you? And the Rav said, no. And somehow someone came over and asked the Rav something else, and they never got back to the conversation. So you see that the Rav said to Jerry, and Jerry's reliable. If he tells you, the Rav said no, the Rav said no. But anyway, for our purposes, you brought a good example of where we differ. Historical school will say, whoever says the Jews are cruel are right. We reached a certain point where we don't want to be cruel, so we save Gentiles. Rakefet says, Darchei Noam is built into the contract with us on Har Sinai, and we have a right to apply it. Yes, Rabbi Reuben.
Leo Young gave the very best definition.
Go ahead.
To promote the general welfare. That's how we define but made darker self. So every self-hating Jew who quotes us and can throw a Machal Shabbos into a pit, you take away the ladder,
right.
you can have a goy killed. All these things are difficult things, but they certainly don't apply today, because this is the Chazonish. Nobody is really a Russian
or okay.
And Goyim and Samuel are king. So how can anybody even consider that it's permitted to allow a person who's an accident, who's not Jewish, to just lie in the road?
And I want to ask you a question. What? I don't. Are we on a
car accident?
No. I don't hear anything. I don't tell me you have a. One second. Let me just see. Maybe no power failure. I hate to be dependent upon others. Let's see. If not. Okay, it came back. Let's hope it stays for another few minutes. Why ask you another question? A Nazi, a Gestapo guy, was just hit by a car. What do you do? You're a doctor. Do you save him?
I would.
What do you say, Danny? No idea. I will only tell you that. No. After the war, we're talking after the war. It's not a question of fighting that it's the enemy troop now. It's the guy who killed Jews. I will tell you that in my house Shabbos, among my grandchildren brought Talmidim to meet me, their friends from yeshiva. One of them's, his grandfather, was SS Gestapo. And the answer is, B'nei Bonav Shel Sancheirov Lamdu Torah B'Yerushalayim. I would save them. You follow me? You never know what's going to come out of a person. And his story, I knew the story right away. I told my grandson that. I read about it in the newspapers years ago. His mother converted as atonement for what her father did. And she married a Jewish man. Lives in Israel, has many children. All right, there's a sideshow there too. They became Haredi, and many of the kids did not go along with it. It caused tension. Some of the kids are less Shomer Shabbos today. You know, the old story with the Haredi world where you try to put a kid into a ghetto. And, this goes against everything I was taught by my Rebbe and everything I believe in. But I want to tell you that you have an obligation to save that Gestapo guy. You don't know what children will come out of him. B'nei Bonav Shasl Cherev Lamdu Torah. What does it say in B'nei Brak? It's the Gemara in the Gittin. Unbelievable.
If he's a man 65 years old without going to have any
problems. All right, we can. Let me just end off the class and one step further. Gentlemen, I'm going to introduce you next time we meet to Moshe Davis, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Davis. I say the name today, many of you never heard of him. He was a seminary graduate of the old seminary. Remember, I don't want you to identify the graduates out of the 20s, the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, even the 60s. Were very different than the graduates you have today. It was a different world, a different seminary, a different faculty, and a different understanding. And then he personally was a frum guy. He was rabbi, I believe, in Rochester. I'll give you details, exact details of his life, very briefly. And of course, the shul was a conservative temple, which generally meant it had mixed seating, but it had a proper Orthodox prayer book. And he was a historian, did his doctorate on the emergence of conservative Judaism. And he turns Isaac Lisa into one of their big heroes. Because what did he fight for? Sermons in English. The Koran in the synagogue. Children not running around on Yom Kippur. Mishnadas being eliminated. It's an embarrassment and an insult. All this, he says, was part of the conservative movement. This is what we brought to the world. This is how we changed the world. And Isaac Lisa had the foresight and the vision to be one of us. And I'll give you more sources like that. And poor Isaac Lisa, a man who fought valiantly for Torah, had no muscle in his lifetime, very little muscle, sick, ill, never married. All right, some of you are happily married. You understand if you don't marry what Chazal have to say. Some of you may not be happily married, so you say, what's the Rebbe talking about? Baruch Hashem, he wasn't married. He didn't have to constantly say the two magic words that every man should learn at the age of 18. Yes, dear. That's all you have to know. Believe me, I just said it this morning. Yes, dear. But my age, I mean it. You understand when you reach already my age and married so many decades, you know your wife is smarter than you. Chazal say it. Habina yeter ben Hashem, a Gemara Nida. But you don't, you know, you don't believe any Gemara. You suddenly became historical school. You're questioning the Gemara. Yeah. No, it's Agada. You don't have to accept every Agada. When you grow older, you understand. Yes, dear. So he had no mazel in life, no children, no heirs. There's no Lisa walking the face of the earth that's a descendant, and no mazel after death. Claimed by the conservative movement, but Moshe Davis wrote an entire book. It's a thick volume. You should see an entire chapter, citations time and again from the accident from Lisa. He's one of us. Moshe Davis says, okay, I owe Moshe Davis a big thank you. You can ask me next time, I'll tell you why. My dear students, right before Yom Kippur, at least we went back in history when not so many Jews fasted on Yom Kippur, and poor Isaac Lisa was fighting tremendous battles. I quoted to you from various entries in the Occident today, gives you a picture of Isaac Lisa, the year of the time, Maimonides College. The man had such vision, but so little success. The times were against him. But above all, as I'll dot the I's and cross the T's next week, even in death, 150 years later, the conservative movement claims him as their own, and so few of us know that we owe Isaac Lisa such a beautiful Kelmale on Yom Kippur, because he was the first that I know of that actually not only was a Rav in America, but a Rav with vision for the future. My dear students, first of all, we don't meet again until the week after Sukkot. Sukkot ends on, a Monday, Tuesday this year. And I see you having a whole shmuis on Yom Tov Sheni. And if Rabbi Betnash can solve that problem, he's a better man than I am. But even though I observe two full days in America, it doesn't contradict why here I will always tell you it's better to observe one day, not two, or to be machmir the second day, not to do malacha, because in America, everyone's observing 2 days. Here, when you're observing 2 days, you're spitting in the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. This is Rav Cook's opinion, others, it's a real problem, because there is no Kedusha here. There is no Yontif. How can you make Kiddush? How can you daven Musaf, etc.? Okay, but be it as it may, my own personal practice based upon what the Rav told me does not contradict my psak. Now, I want to ask you a question that I asked you yesterday. I asked you yesterday, is there anything wrong with a person thinking he can be Mashiach? Right, we're talking about the Lubavitcher Rebbe could be thought that. I'm going to talk about it, if not this year, next year, be Ezrat Hashem. I told you when I went into the rabbinate, I had the feeling I'm going to make every Jew a Shomer Shabbos. Is that a good feeling, or am I an idiot? No, how many of you saw the weekend papers? Gentlemen, you're from Rehovot, Rabbi Amram Lavi. Have you met him yet? Charlie? Morty? Finally, shall pass it down to them. You got to see that article. Here's a kid, 20 years of age, raised in a chiloni home. I don't know what it means, chiloni, if it's a Sfardic, it can't be entirely chiloni. He was going to a general school, and his brother said to him at the age of 12, you should be mitchazek a little bit in Yiddishkeit, start putting on tefillin. The kid starts to put on tefillin. He has an absolute photographic memory. He knows kol ha-Torah kula ba'al peh. He sits and learns. He married the right woman, at least so far. Believe me, I don't know. I don't know if I can say this about my wife, but she just insists he should sit and learn. She brings him food. He learns how to see, tell me, 20 hours a day, something like that. 2 hours a day he teaches others. He gives stucca. A tenth of his time, he teaches others. They asked him, are you going to be like a Rav Ovadia Yosef? And he says, I'm going to be bigger than Rav Ovadia Yosef. I know what he wrote at my age, and I know what I've already written. Now, I want to ask you, is this normal? A kid should speak like this? Kid believes he's Mashiach. Rakefet believes he's going to make every Jew Shomer Shabbos. And Harav Lavi is going to be bigger than Rav Ovadia Yosef. Gentlemen, particularly Morty and Charlie, I will sincerely request that try to find out where he's speaking once. Go to hear him in Rehovot and give me your take on him, because this article blew me away. And you got to understand, you're reading this in a newspaper that is not exactly pro-Yiddishkeit and pro-Torah. They're always trying to find fault. I never saw such a positive article in my life. Next, I have two more treasures to share with you. Did I tell you about this? This is where Rabbi Shalom Gold slaughters Aaron Rakefet, Leil Yom Ha'atzmaut, in our big conference of rabbis, that it's a miracle the world remains standing afterwards. That itself, you have to say, Yom Ha'atzmaut had a double miracle, that last year the world remained standing. And it was all about Satma. I said that Satma is our greatest pit today, our greatest bar. It's filled with good Jews that we have to be makarov the proper Yiddishkeit and turn them into good, proper, total Jews with love of Eretz Yisrael, etc. And Rabbi Gold was hysterical. There are Bikarsim, and he quoted the Hilchot Mamrim, Perik Aleph, everything that Yitzchak alluded to, Perik Gimel, I should say, Halacha Aleph Bet Gimel. And one of the proofs he bought, this is an ad from Pomegranate in Flatbush. And everything they have for you for Pesach, Kadesh, Rechatz, and everything you need, what you can buy there. And when it reaches Nirtzah, Lishana Haba B'Yerushalayim, looking forward to Mashiach uniting us all in Jerusalem. And Rabbi Gold was hysterical. Mashiach uniting us. We're not in Jerusalem now. Jerusalem doesn't need more Jews. There's not a state of Israel. The gates are not open. There's not a nefesh benefesh. This is what they say in Nirtzah. Looking forward to Mashiach uniting us all in Jerusalem. What, you can't get on a plane and get off in Jerusalem and be united with your past, your present, and your future? Well, take a look at it if you're interested, and let me know whether Rabbi Gold was right or whether Rakefet still deserves to have his head. Finally, and this is unbelievable, I've often told the story, no one believed me, the state of Israel was saved by a Ger Chassid. He developed a system that has changed modern warfare with how to protect planes. Right after the Yom Kippur War, a fifth of our Air Force was knocked out, And the story is unbelievable, how the Air Force goes to Weizmann Institute, and Weizmann Institute, and they reveal the name in the article, Professor Menachem Krauss, the Gera Chassid. Women aren't allowed into any room when he met with the generals. And a man who had never seen an airplane changed the entire course of modern warfare and saved the state of Israel. Today, he and the general from the army who dealt with him, whose picture is shown, but they can't show Krauss's picture, they reveal his name, however, run a high-tech industry that employs over 1,000 Haredi'ot women whose husbands are sitting and learning, and they are working. If you want copies of the article, I made 2 copies here, which I used in America. No one could believe this, and when they saw the article, they went into ecstasy. And let me end off before you... That's the Gera Rebbe of today, of course. And let me just say that Acher Dachei Noham, and until we meet again, and again, that you should have a Gemar Chatima Tova L'Shnat Chaim, Osheva Kol Tov, a very easy fast. Psychologically, it is easy because the fast ends a few minutes after 6. It's going to be the last year, I'm afraid, that we have it so easy, if you know what's going on here. And a wonderful Chag Sameach. You will see me here every day. I'm here. I live here. I have work to do. I'm preparing lectures. I have to Xerox. I need Spar, whatever. I'm here every day. But nevertheless, I want to already wish you a Chag Sameach. It should be a fabulous Sukkot. And I plead with the Ribbono Shel Olam that so nish sein fashtet, we paid a price already for this Chag. We shouldn't have to pay any other price. Let the debate be on whether women should fight or shouldn't fight front line, and chas v'chalila, we shouldn't have to mourn again. And I just want to end off recalling the memory of that young man. Because of these young people, we can sit here and study Torah. Netanel Yahalomi Hashem Yikom Damo. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.